So the officers recommend in 10E-J to develop a design framework within 1 year of the NOR being confirmed. And I consider that the matters addressed in these conditions relating to design, construction and operation principles and outcomes are largely covered in the landscape and design plan condition, although, as noted above, this could be strengthened by integrating most of the council officers' suggestions, so bringing the suggestions or the clauses from 10E-J through into the landscape and design plan.
I'm struggling to keep up with what that design framework's function is, and I need to grasp that. So we've got a concept plan subject to detailed design. Then we've got the management plans. Is the design framework like a design guide sort of framework? What is that beast?
Well, we have already included in the landscape and design plan condition a clause that it should set out the principles and outcomes for. The first step would be to establish the principles and outcomes that the final design, the detailed design, will deliver, and for that landscape and design plan to be worked through in an iterative manner with the benefit of additional survey works from the specialists, and to be keyed into the community liaison forum and mana whenua engagement framework. So I'm of a similar view. What would the design framework in the way that it is written achieve? I think that actually there's some considerable risks and not a great amount of utility in the way that this is framed at the moment, and that it is set to be completed within 1 year. That is at odds with the alignment with the community liaison forum and the mana whenua engagement framework. But even if you resolve that matter, then it would overlap with the outline plan works. And in my experience with these processes, so over the last 5 years, I've become a bit of a design framework junkie, maybe, this process of setting principles and outcomes absolutely needs to be paired iteratively with the design process and with opportunity for meaningful engagement with mana whenua and the community. And the condition as written does not do that. It also doesn't, it's not clear who's going to prepare it. There's no suggestion of who would prepare it, how it would be prepared. It has no opportunity for that crossover and how it would be certified. But I think that there are some really good suggestions in there that should be brought through into the landscape and design plan conditions. So, for example, the noted design principles, which is at 10J. Yes, I'm just looking for one in particular. So, 10 big J, little f. The design principles will reflect community identity and place and or cultural and historical values is what I would like to see carried, brought through and integrated into the landscape and design plan condition. And I think we can work through with the legal team and planners in that regard. And I also think that further edits to the landscape and design plan condition would help clarify the point that departures from the NEIZ design guide, which both council and our team have agreed can form something of a basis for the landscape and design plan conditions, that any departures would actually also include additional matters. I think it's that term departure that can perhaps be seen as, it can also perhaps create misconception that it's going to somehow be lesser. Or what I mean by that is that it could make a much more explicit connection between, in terms of the involvement of Mana Whenua in the community liaison forum, and also the hub's integration with the township of Bunnythorpe.
I'm interested that the landscape architects think that the Northeast Industrial Design Guide has some useful starting principles. I can't remember it. I know it exists. But I thought it was more I suppose it is for very large scale distribution centres, so it probably is got that sort of feel to it. But you're satisfied that it does have some useful starting principles.
Yes, I do. I mean, because it also steps down in context, so it considers the externalities as well as how the site might work within. So, and it does have a focus on upfront on the integration with the rural and rural residential environment. So that is its focus. So that also speaks to my point that perhaps there's the need to strengthen things in regard to how this development might interface with Bunnythorpe, which is a village or township, a growing, likely to be growing node or township. I guess it's also from the principle that a third of the site is already covered by that design guide, so it should be reflected. And in my opinion, it has merit. It considers waterways, existing vegetation of merit, all of the matters that I would think would be a starting point. And so it's sort of, in lay terms, not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. It's been through a planning process. It's had consultation and been approved and adopted.
I was thinking out loud, but I may as well just ask you the question now. You referred to 10J little f in terms of one of the key pathways for community and tangata whenua input into the landscaping design. Is it intended that F does provide for mana whenua inclusion? Because it's not clear from the way in which that's worded. From your perspective, is it intended that both community and mana whenua input are intended to be included in that clause?
I don't think it's just that clause that does
But where it refers to cultural and historical values, do you read that as being mana whenua input?
Absolutely.
You do? Okay. Yes. So it may just be a matter of tweaking the wording to make that clear, because of course cultural and historical values may relate to the broader community. Thank you. Super. Oh, and just a question around the framework condition itself. What I hear you saying is that you're not opposed in principle to a condition along those lines. Would that be right?
I guess it's also because I absolutely agree with the process to follow, which is to involve the community liaison forum in Mana Whenua, is to have a vehicle to do that is as simple as possible.
Yes.
Not have layers and layers and layers. And
yeah.
So having a landscape and design plan, if you want to call it a framework, I'm not opposed to that. But it's saying, right, this is where the design is landing, and that the process to get to where the design is landing will need to include a process where we have agreed principles and outcomes. So I think having things clear and that will help in terms of.
Okay, this. Thank you.
Yeah. So there's just another matter in terms of the suggested design outcomes for maximisation of beneficial outcomes for natural character, rural character and visual amenity to complement a high quality landscape, and that's at 10J little h. So while these matters are important considerations, and I have identified the project will have positive natural character effects and some positive visual amenity effects, and personally that was a key priority of mine, that this project would be able to achieve some positive effects for the community and their environs. The maximisation requirement, or that term, I suppose, would be more in keeping with a civic landscape. So I think it may set, in terms of the obvious operational and health and safety or safety of operations requirements that the Kiwi Rail need to also extend. I wonder if that's really the right word or to be using. Further, as a freight hub, I don't think it's appropriate for the development to maximise rural character. Rather, it should be well integrated into the existing environment.
That's quite a good point, because you're not creating a reserve, or but would it be optimization or some word like that?
Well, it's not to say that there shouldn't be some reference to the rural vernacular, and in particular I think this relates, for example, to the final form of the buildings and roof lines and their articulation, where it will be referenced to.
No, I was on H, not I. Not the rural landscape, but the natural character. Maximisation word.
Oh, optimisation. Yes.
Hmm.
That would be a better word. And I think that, if you were to keep with the term maximisation, it would miss a key opportunity to restore the River Plain Terrace and Wetland Park communities. Mm. So that was my summary. I'm not jumping aroundy, but it's.
Thank you very much. It's very helpful. It's good just to be led through it visually. So I'll just check if there are questions. Judith?
I have one remaining question. And this also relates to something that Mr. and Mrs. Woodfield raised this morning about hay fever. And it is quite a detailed question, I guess. I'm just really interested to understand whether the native indigenous planting scheme that you've identified is a high pollen generating scheme or a low pollen generating scheme, obviously pollen having a key impact on hay fever. It's just a curiosity more than anything else.
Well, from someone that also suffers from hay fever, I think, you know, indigenous plants don't trigger me, but I'm not a hay fever specialist. So I guess in the process to determine the exact plant communities that can be affected, that we absolutely explore along with ecological merit and appropriateness to the site.
Thank you. Sorry, I lied. I have one further question. At the minimum, you have a 5 metre wide planting buffer. And I was just wondering how many specimens you would actually get for that width, realistically. Is it sort of 3 plants, 4 plants? I mean, obviously, it's going to depend on what you're planting, but just to give me a rough mental picture.
Yes, so in that, in an And I also, it's interesting, I stepped out this room and it's roughly 20 metres from there to there. So that gives you a sense of, also when we're talking about 30 metres of depth of planting along the perimeter road, you know, that it is bigger than the length of this room. But in 5 metres, you tic-tac-toe your planting, so you wouldn't, and that would be part of doing a more naturalised approach. But if you had, so harakeke would grow, well, some of the big, so, you know, there's opportunities perhaps to integrate some of the bigger species that could then, might be used for harvesting in the future, perhaps. That they would be quite large, so they could be 2 metres in diameter in the end, but you plant them slightly closer to begin with. So you could be 3 or 4 plants deep to that, and then you'd also, you know, put your, some of your tree species within that. So you're wanting to create, as in a naturalised environment, that sort of understory, midstory canopy approach. So rather than a
realistically
garden.
3 or 4, but offset and naturalised.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
Yep.
Ms. Rimmer, from hearing from the ecologist yesterday, I think it was, we did ask him some questions regarding the ecological benefits regarding the stormwater ponds. And I was looking through the recommended conditions around the landscape and design plan and just wondered what opportunity there was for ecological input into that. Because as I see it now, doesn't exclude it, but it doesn't explicitly require either. And would you see benefits in ensuring that an ecologist was involved in its preparation?
Yes, is the short answer. And I also note that in, I'm just trying to find the reference. Oh, here it is. In the KiwiRail offered conditions 56C, it talks about restoring Indigenous biodiversity. So you wouldn't be able to do that without the input of ecologists.
I just wonder if it needs to be explicitly measured, mentioned.
Yes.
I had a look at the North East Industrial Zone Design Guide. And I suppose what you're saying, it's a good starting point, but looking at it, I saw just quite a few things that would be quite at odds from my point of view at what KiwiRail is proposing for the freight hub in terms of site sizes and particular treatments. And we just had that discussion about, it talks about maintaining rural character, which is not what you've just talked about. So that's just, I suppose, more of an observation more than not. And potentially that's where the council's coming from, is this is quite different to what was envisioned might occur in the northeastern industrial zone, just its sheer size and scale of it. More of an observation to think about in terms of maybe that's where the council's coming from in that regard. I queried Miss Arthur Young and Miss Ratley on day one about how the issue of public access to rivers is maintained and enhanced exactly through this proposal. If we're taking a strict Section 6D interpretation, I can't see how it is. But from reading your evidence, I think you're talking about these opportunities for the new connections to be made with the stormwater ponds and the like. So, yeah. I think you've otherwise answered all the questions I had. I was particularly interested in how the community was going to be engaged in the design framework that the council had proposed. So you've raised that as a point yourself. So thank you.
Kia ora no, Ms. Rimmer. Thank you again for the evidence you provided, and particularly for your presentation today, which I found really helpful in addressing, for the most part, the questions that I had intended to ask you today. So I really have very little remaining that needs to be clarified. Probably the only issue that I need to clarify with you at this point is in relation to Mana Whenua values, which you address in your evidence at paragraphs 9.3 and 9.4. And while you say there, you acknowledge the submissions of Mana Whenua as they relate to cultural values and the physical, perceptual and associative components of landscape, as well as the continuing associations and use of the awa and whenua historically and through continuing association as part of the rohe, including marae and so on. But then you go on to say that your assessment has not addressed values relating to cultural issues other than through a desktop review of shared and recognised values associated with the Oroa and Mangaone area. I was just wondering, can you just explain and clarify what you mean by that? The extent to which you have or haven't addressed Mana Whenua values would be really helpful from my point of view.
Sure. So it comes back initially to the definition of landscape and then also how our remit or mandate under best practice guidelines for the institute, and is also being developed through Te Tangi Atu Manu recently, which has been adopted to consider values to tangata whenua, often it's expressed in regional policy statements. Yes. So I take that responsibility very seriously in terms of wanting, you know, living in Aotearoa to have to include Te Ao Māori as much as possible in my assessment, both because I find it really interesting and also I think that we are living in Aotearoa and those perspectives are important. And I think this came up yesterday as well, we had hoped to have a cultural impact assessment report available prior to this lodgement. But without that, I have, to the best of my ability, used existing documentation and resources to gain an impression of those values, plus my understanding and experience working on other projects in partnership with Mana Whenua and starting with the whenua and the awa and the how this area is likely to have been used and as reflected by, in the first instance, Te Reo Māori names. So Mangaone stream is very significant, and my experience starting as a in the scientific field and then moving into horticultural science and just an ecology of what this area would have looked like hundreds of years ago and how it would have been used. So it is those first principles plus noting where marae are and were in historical records. Mangaone stream is likely to have been an important mahinga kai. I've heard that. We know anecdotally there's tuna in that vicinity, that there's continuing ahikā in terms of land ownership. So I'm looking through the regional and the district plan notifications that exist, the statutory acknowledgements, and so forth, to try and build up a picture in my own mind of what this area was and is, and those values are also included in my assessment of moderate to high adverse effects on the natural landscape and my growing understanding of Te Manawatu.
Thank you. How in particular did you address the Te Manawa Te Wai issues associated with mana whenua, tangata whenua values?
So, first, immediately of how the waterways were addressed, so the efforts to, I mean, it looked, and it also relates to the alternatives process or the selection of the site and what sort of level or extent of waterways might be impacted by a development of this size. And in this district, or in the Manawatu district, that waterways would be impacted in a 170-hectare site. So it's also important to me that just sheer loss factor. Then how or if they open watercourses could be maintained within the site, so the naturalised channel and the fact that it could have the ability for to retain a meandering form and habitat. Fish passage was also very important, and the way in which the outfalls into the Mangaone stream managed, and the degree of treatment and or otherwise that would be afforded through the stormwater ponds, and the planting approach is also part of that. So then providing for new habitat, additional habitat, or to come into those areas once those plants are established. Mm.
Thank you. Just checking to see if there are any other questions. No, I think we've covered them all. Thank you very much.
Okay. I'm afraid I have another question. It came to mind as you were responding to Commissioner De Sweetman, and also I think it links to what Commissioner Pomeroy has just been asking you. If we look at the landscape plan, we've got that naturalised northern tributary.
Mm.
And to my view, there's a fair amount of it that's actually culverted as it passes under the top end of the log yard. That's the bit just there. So from your perspective, is there any reason why that naturalised channel couldn't move to the outside of that railway line that you see alongside it and sit between the active hub and the perimeter road and potentially move the security fence back to the south so that you actually could create public access to a naturalized waterway, even if not a natural one?
I've asked that question about the extent of culverting of that naturalised channel, and I understand from discussions from this delay here there's issues with the invert level that needs to be achieved here. So getting the water from that point to this point through that area, which is what you're notionally proposing, is difficult, but it's certainly a matter I would want to explore again in detail design, because I agree that the perceptual and perhaps benefits, other benefits, as you've just suggested, would be greater if that could occur.
Thank you.
Thank you. thank you. I'm actually not going to get into the subject of how you assess natural character and matters of emphasis between landscape architects. But it was helpful to go through that, and I appreciate very much your time and the thoughtful way in which you went through that. As an observation, it must be an extremely interesting assignment for a scale and size and complexity of this nature. It's quite a big job.
It's good.
All right, so it's 12:23 and all is well. We are going to conclude this session now, and we're going to have lunch together and then go for a site visit so that we look at some of the properties where we're going to get submissions and just otherwise review the area. And in terms of start time tomorrow, we've only got Ms. Bell, and I don't think we need to start at 9. I think we start at 10. Because we'll comfortably finish either by lunch or early afternoon, and then everyone can take a break again. So does that sound okay? We will, however, have to stick to the timetable next week that Kath has arranged, because she's got a lot of people coming and their times will need to be respected. So we will be controlled by Kath next week. In those
I think we're
days.
Always controlled by Kath, aren't we?
So unless there's anything else, I wish you a good day, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you, sir.